Hey y'all, movie retrospective. Although on today's show, I think I didn't entirely realize, I mean, I kind of realized this when I put it in the poll. When I put it in the poll, this was like Shudder had just added it, so I was like really excited about it. So this is actually a series from 1980, like a British TV series called Hammer House of Horror. So, I mean, I think I realized it was a series, but I didn't realize how long it was going to take me to watch it because there's 13 episodes, and each episode is like 52, 53 minutes. So this is essentially like 13 hours worth of entertainment. But I persevered. Tom didn't see all of them,
No, I saw some of them.
but I actually like watched all of them like over the course of a couple of days. And I thought that I had seen this when I was a kid, but a lot of it wasn't real familiar. So maybe it was another one of them today, because I love horror anthologies. And there were a lot of them like coming out around this time period, and even like in the US and stuff like that. I mean, obviously we have like the big hitters over here, like Twilight Zone, and we have one Thriller, which I kind of feel like, was that Boris Karloff? I don't know. I don't really want to say what that is, but I
Remember Night
don't.
Gallery?
Yeah, and Night Gallery is actually, I was just gonna say,
Yeah.
Night Gallery is actually one of my favorite. And some of the stories in this kind of reminded me of Night
That's what I
Gallery
was
a
gonna
little
say.
bit.
Yeah.
It is very Night Gallery-esque. But the thing about it, though, is that because it's Hammer, I think pretty much all of them are set in like, the modern day, or what was modern in 1980.
They all have boobs too.
And
They all have
they
nudity.
pretty much do. They pretty much
Which is good.
they
Now,
all have nudity in
and
them.
now here, I'm gonna. Right off the bat, I'm gonna tell you guys, it's not the same epic nature of boob and boobism that happened in the Hammer movies. You know what I mean? Those girls were fucking off the charts. These are more kind of like, I would say, kind of B and C stringer type actresses. You know what I mean?
You think?
They, yeah, a lot of them, they were good looking, but they weren't like some of the knockouts from the movies.
Well, I kind of feel like by 1980, I mean, Hammer came back like later on fairly recently, but I kind of feel like this was, Hammer's kind of like last hurrah, was doing this series. I think it was for ITV, which was like the rival to the BBC at the time.
They're trying to do what Hammer does. They're just doing
Yeah.
they're doing it in a slightly updated fashion, and maybe they're trying to maybe they were kind of saying that those fucking Victorian fucking bustiers and the fucking titties up around the ears and shit. I mean, oh, that was all passé. Oh, that's just too sexist. We can't have that anymore. Just take your clothes off. I
Well, I
don't
kind
know.
of feel like they were more trying. I think they were trying something different. Like, we're just going to do something like modern
They were trying to
instead
modernize it
of.
a lot.
Yeah, so, but still boobs because, that's
Yeah, it was
kind of what
kind of had the
Hammer
hippie
was.
vibe to it. It wasn't so 60s. It wasn't swinging 60s. It
Yeah,
was
so
more
it's
hippie.
very, very. I mean, it came out in 1980, like early 1980,
It
so
had
this
some
is
decent
still
witch.
very 70s.
They had a couple. They had that one. They had like some decent witches and shit in it. You know what I mean? That one witch episode was pretty good.
Yeah, that was like the first
It was like
one.
the first one. That was pretty good.
And interestingly, I think that I recognized, because I watched, a lot of British movies and British TV and stuff back in the day. So I think I recognized every single motherfucking actor in this.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Every one of them made a shit ton of movies too.
They did. And like
Every and
TV
everything.
shows. Yeah. And so it's just kind of like, so the whole experience of me watching this series was just kind of like, hey, it's that guy. And hey, it's that woman.
They
It's
got the dude
just.
that played Dim from fucking
Yeah, I
Robert
couldn't believe
Orange.
I saw him. He was like in the second one.
Yeah, he's good.
Denholm Elliott was in one, which is probably my favorite episode. He was actually the dad in Brimstone and Treacle as well. But I
He
mean,
was in
he was
everything.
in a fuck ton of. I
They
mean,
hired
he
that dude
was.
to class up the joint all the time and you just have him around. Yeah, that dude was like the British version of Burgess Meredith. You just, pull Burgess Meredith out, put him in the movie.
Like I said, let him class up the
Yeah,
joint.
let him class up a joint a little bit.
But yeah, so these were cool because I mean, obviously, just like with any anthology series, you're gonna get some that are stronger than others. But these are all surprisingly decent. These were all really worth watching. I think there was like a couple that were standouts, but all of them were pretty damn good.
I'd put it on par with Night Gallery, although Night Gallery was eerier, a lot weirder at certain times, but close.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So I'm just saying, like, if you liked the Hammer horror movies, this is essentially like 13 short Hammer films, but set in the modern day. So they're not like kind of gothic, really. There were a couple of them had that sort of had gothic trappings to them.
Yeah, they didn't have the gothic look.
But yeah, but most of them were
The
were
storytelling
modern.
was kind of gothic. kind of like got.
Yeah, because I think that like some of the directors and writers, it looked like pretty much the same pool. I think most of them was just directed. It was like three different dudes, and they had done some other Hammer movies in the past. I think one of them had done Satanic Rites of Dracula, and one did like Dracula 80, 1972. So if you like Hammer movies but want to see like a more modern take on them, they still have a Hammer vibe, but they're modern.
Yeah.
And I kind of feel like you'll probably really dig this too if you're into like the Amicus horror anthology movies, because I really dig those as well.
Yeah.
I love like anthology type of stuff. So let's kind of go through all the episodes, and when we get to ones that I think are the best ones, then we'll talk like a little bit more about those.
Yeah, I'm right off the top from the very beginning. They're worth watching. Out of the two, out of everything, it reminds me mostly of Night Gallery, but a British version of that. I'd still have to give it to Night Gallery for just weirdness, though. Night Gallery is more intense, more weird.
Yeah, I found Night Gallery like creepier,
real creepy, kind of. Yeah, the girl that finds the damn. Was an evil girl that was torturing a damn monster and putting rocks around it. That was a weird one. Remember that one?
Yeah.
And then the dude who had to live in the air conditioning. It's like in Florida. As soon as the air conditioner was gone, he fell apart.
Well, that was based on a Lovecraft story.
Yeah,
that's a good one. Cool Air. That's a very famous Lovecraft story. That's been adapted lots of times.
Right.
Yeah, this one was interesting because I don't think none of them seem to be like adaptations of other stories, because I know that they had like another anthology. I think this was also a British anthology show, Tales of the Unexpected. And I think most of those were, if I'm not mistaken, please correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure that most of those were adapted from like Roald Dahl stories. And I think that, well, even like Alfred Hitchcock Presents and shit like that in the U.S., I think they adapted like a bunch of Roald Dahl stories as well. And like I said, like, you know, Twilight Zone and stuff, they adapted like a lot of stories by like Richard Matheson and Harlan Ellison and, you know, established short stories. These ones all looked like, at least from what I could determine, were all like original stories and were all kind of like written by some of the Hammer writers and directed by the Hammer directors.
Yeah, I'd have to give a shout out there to Twilight Zone. Probably one of the best television series of all time.
I rewatch Twilight Zone like every couple of years, like the whole series.
Fuck, man.
I mean, and
some
again,
some of those were weird. Man.
Some of them are better than others, but you're going to get that with any anthology show. I mean,
some of them
were
pretty just generic, but some of them were fucking really weird.
Yeah. The thing about this one, the thing about Hammer House of Horror is that I think it relied less on twist endings, because I feel like Tales of the Unexpected or a lot of the stuff that was based on like Roald Dahl stuff was, kind of like, oh, there's like a twist ending. And some of these had twist endings. Some of them you can see coming. I'm thinking in particular of one called Visitor from the Grave, which I think I saw that ending coming a mile away because that twist has been done a lot of times. But there was one episode in particular, which I'll talk about in a second, that went in a direction I really was not expecting. So I thought that was kind of cool. And not all of them had twists, really. So I kind of thought that was good. There's kind of something for everybody. There's witches. There's like satanic cult. There's like a conspiracy theory, psychological horror type thing. There's doppelgangers. There's a werewolf one. You know, so there's kind of like a weird surrealist like dream nightmare thing. There's kind of, like I said, something for everybody. Oh, and there's a serial killer one too. So the first one, which I think is one of the ones that you saw, is called Witching Time. This one, interestingly, the witch is played by Patricia Quinn, probably most famous, well, not probably, absolutely most famous for playing Magenta in the Rocky Horror Picture Show. So she's in this one. And basically what happens is there's a dude named David, and I guess he's like a music composer, like he writes music for movies or something. And so his wife is cheating on him, which he suspects but can't prove. And it actually turns out that she is fucking his psychiatrist or his psychologist, who's played by Ian McCulloch, who was in a bunch of Lucio Fulci movies. So again, you know, he was a British actor, but for Irish, Scottish, I don't remember. But he was in a bunch of Lucio Fulci, like in a bunch of Italian horror movies. So his wife's dicking around and on him, like jumping on the psychiatrist's dick. Now, while he's home alone, a very weird thing happens. This strange woman, Magenta, appears in his barn and claims that she is Lucinda Jessop and that she was being burned for a witch back in 16... and somehow used magic to, like, magic herself into the future to, like, escape the flames, which, neat trick. So she is an actual witch. So at this point, it's good because, This one wasn't one of my favorites, but I kind of like that had they started out with this one, because I like old school witch shit. So she turns out to be like a super evil witch, but for a long time, because she can apparently like appear and disappear, because David like kind of locks her in a room, as you would, because at first he thinks she's just a nutcase who turned up in his barn. And then he calls somebody else, and then like she's disappeared from the locked room. So she can kind of like disappear and appear at will. So for a long time, nobody else sees her. So everybody else thinks that David is just like losing his fucking marbles, because he says, like, for real, there's this witch that like popped up, and like, and he can, she can like control him and stuff. So there's that whole situation where this witch is like tormenting him, and also kind of like trying to get him to kill his unfaithful wife and like burn her at the stake instead for whatever purpose. But yeah, this one was a pretty decent one. Like I said, cool to see Patricia Quinn in something else. I know she was in other things, but I mean, she's just so, she's magenta to me, so it's just like weird seeing her playing another part. And it's weird because she almost sounded like she had an American accent in this, and I was just like, oh, she's Irish though, I'm pretty sure. But yeah, it kind of sounded like a thing. Now, the one with the twist that I was talking about that I didn't see coming is the second one. And this one's called The 13th Reunion. And this starts out with this woman named Ruth, and she's like a journalist, but she works on a newspaper on like the women's page, and she's like really not happy about it, because she's always just kind of like, why do I have to like write about all these stupid fashion shows and shit like that? I want to write about something like important. So because her editor apparently thinks she is fat, even though she absolutely is not. And it's really weird. They should have probably hired, or at least put her in a fat suit or something, because the first part of this, they're like, okay, well, there's this new weight loss clinic or like a health farm, and there's been all these weird like complaints about it, because everybody's saying that they're super abusive, and there's like, but it works apparently. But so they're gonna send this woman, Ruth, like undercover to like go infiltrate this health farm. And so, but they make all these like, literally the first thing, she walks into her editor's office and the editor says, you're overweight. And I'm like, is she though? I mean, she had a bulky sweater on, but then when they showed her later on, I'm like, she is absolutely, maybe she was like 70s overweight, because she was like super skinny.
No, it's just the 70s,
I guess. So
well, no, what I'm saying is you know, it's just It's theater. You're suspending disbelief.
Well, because then it bothered me the whole time. I'm like, she is absolutely not fat by any definition.
These people pretend for a living. Back then,
they put her in bulky clothes at first, but then later on, she was just wearing normal shit.
It was like the so-called fat. It's like the so-called fat girl from Greece. She's obviously not fat. She's just wearing fucking big bulky clothes.
Yeah. It's just kind of like,
then they show her in the last scene and she's skinny. Well, she always looked like that.
Yeah, it's like they were just kind of like punched her out.
Yeah, they were just trying to make you believe it.
That's kind of what they did here.
Yeah.
So what ends up happening is that she infiltrates this this health farm or this weight loss clinic. And the first thing, like, she goes to this meeting and there's this dude and he's just berating this woman, like telling her what a fat cow she is and how she's disgusting.
It's tough love.
And all this other kind of stuff.
It's tough love.
And so Ruth is just kind of like, huh, well, this is weird. Now, she ends up meeting this other dude who is also at the house, who's played by the same guy that played Dim in A Clockwork Orange. Like I said, this is the only other thing I had seen him in, too, even though he's been in a shit ton of stuff, but that's probably what he's most famous for. So she finds out that, like, he's allowed, because she's not allowed to eat, because they're like, all right, you fat pig, like, you have to eat just, like, lettuce and nothing. Lettuce and cigarettes, that's, like, the 70s diet, and cocaine. But he's allowed to, like, eat all the potatoes he wants and all this other stuff, and they said, well, they, you know, it's different for everybody else, for everybody. So he's just allowed to eat all this fattening shit. But then it turns out that the guy, Dim, even his character's name is Ben, okay, but he dies in a car accident, and after that, Ruth hooks up with this kid, well, like a guy, like a young guy that works at the mortuary, and he's like, you know, I think that, like, the two guys that run the mortuary, I think they're doing some shady shit, like, with some of the bodies that turn up at this mortuary. And so she's like, ooh, it's a real story. Like, instead of, like, all the stupid weight loss shit she usually writes. So she starts playing, like, Nancy Drew around the shit and trying to find out what these two dudes are doing with these occasional bodies that they're spiriting away somewhere. And this one was good because this one, like I said, it was an adventure, this one, because I had no idea, like, where it was going. I was just like, what's with this weight loss clinic? And then I thought it was going to go, remember that Creepshow episode where they made them eat those parasites that, yeah, like, could take all that weight off? I thought it was going to go in that direction. That's not the direction it goes in. I just really was not expecting it. I don't really want to spoil it because I don't know if a lot of Americans have seen Hammer House of Horror. And Shudder just added it. You can also watch it, I think, on Tubi and Pluto for free, maybe. But Shudder just added it, too. It's, like, in their little series tab. But so I don't really want to say, like, where this went because I didn't expect it. And I was just kind of like, oh, okay, fair enough. That's kind of cool. Now, the third one, I think this was my favorite. This was the one with Denholm Elliott in it. This one was called Rude Awakening. This one I really liked because I really liked that it was kind of like a nightmare, like, all the way through. And it had kind of, I don't want to say it had a David Lynchian vibe, but it did kind of have that whole, like, dream. And you don't really know, like, what's a dream and what's reality. So Denholm Elliott, he plays this dude named Norman, and he's, like, a real estate agent. And he has this office, and he has, like, this hot secretary. And at the beginning of it, like, this dude comes in and says, hey, I have this, like, big property that I want, you know, taken off my hands. He's just, he doesn't own it or whatever. And so Norman goes there, and it's, like, this big, it's a massive, like, mansion or whatever, but it's, like, a shithole. It's, like, really in a horrible, like, condition. And so you kind of establish that. You establish that this older guy is having an affair with his secretary. His name is Lolly.
Yeah, she's younger.
She's way younger. She's like his daughter's age, maybe his granddaughter's age. I'm not really sure. Maybe not. But she
it's
looks
funny.
Familiar.
He gets behind her. She's sitting at the desk. He puts her in and just grabs her.
And just grabs her.
And dude walks in. He's like, oh, sorry. It's funny.
That wasn't what I looked like. I was massaging.
Yeah,
he was doing like Steven Seagal, like he was testing her for breast cancer.
Checking for breast cancer.
Yeah, he's...
Chicken can't do a shiatsu, special shiatsu. No, don't get me
started on that.
Tom, stop talking about me.
This isn't even about me. I'm not even in this movie.
Yeah, not in this movie.
But yeah, so he also has a wife named Emily who he is kind of planning to get rid of. Now, it's kind of cool how this one goes on too because each time, like, what ends up happening is that he goes to this weird house, like, out in the middle of nowhere, and he's looking at it, and then, like I said, it's really creepy and dilapidated or whatever, and then this dumbwaiter thing opens, and, like, his wife's body falls out of it, and then he keeps hearing these disembodied voices saying, like, why did you kill your wife? Why did you kill your wife? And he's like, what the fuck? And then, like, he wakes up, and that was actually a nightmare. But then as it goes on, he keeps thinking that he woke up from a nightmare, but every single subsequent thing also turns out to be a nightmare. And it's, like, funny because Lolly, his secretary, looks different, like, in every iteration. Like, she has different colored hair. She has different colored outfit on. Like, in one iteration, she actually kind of looked like some fucking Xanadu, like, Olivia Newton-John. Like, she had, like, a big blonde afro-y kind of thing and, like, this crazy red spandex something that you would never wear to work, like, in a million years. But because it was, like, a dream of his, you know, but he keeps hearing these voices and, like, getting phone calls saying, like, why did you kill your wife and all this other stuff. And then, like, you don't actually know what's really going on and what he's just dreaming until the end. And I really, really liked this one. I think this one and, spoiler alert, the one with Peter Cushing were my favorite ones. I think those were the two strongest ones. And from the few reviews of this that I saw, that seems to be, like, the pretty prevailing attitude. Although I think that, like, I don't know, it's kind of all over the map, like, which ones people liked. But I think this one and the Peter Cushing one kind of come up as most people's favorites. The next one is called Growing Pains, and this one was pretty good. It was just, like, about a kid who, his dad's, like, a scientist, and he was trying to grow plants that have protein in them. I was like, ooh, he was way ahead of his time, wasn't he? You know, for the third world, like, to feed the hungry and everything like that. And his son ends up just casually walking through his lab one day and just swallowing a bunch of shit that was, like, in a jar, like, as one does. And it kills him. And so they adopt another kid, like, who's the same age, like, from an orphanage, and the kid is, like, super weird. And then you think that it's kind of going in an evil kid direction, which it kind of does, but there's also some supernatural shit going on, too, like, with the ghost of the first kid. So this one was pretty good, too. Like I said, this one was kind of, I've seen other stories like this, so this one wasn't, like, super original, but, you know, still worth watching. The next one was The House That Bled to Death. And that was one where, which is a great title, by the way. That one's like a couple, and they move into this kind of shitty council house or whatever with their daughter. And I guess there'd been like a murder there before, but they didn't know that. And then this one had a twist too that also I didn't see coming. And I actually kind of liked the twist on this one. Again, I don't want to spoil it, but all this like supernatural shit starts happening. Like the pipes bust open and blood comes out and, you know, just poltergeisty type shit, starts going on. And, they start blaming the neighbor, cause I guess like the poltergeist shit only happens like when the neighbor is there and all this other stuff. So yeah, this one was pretty good too. And like I said, also has a twist at the end that I didn't really see coming, but I actually did like the twist of this one. The next one is called Charlie Boy. And this one was kind of like a voodoo-y type story, had kind of an African fetish kind of like Trilogy of Terror type situation where this couple, they buy, like, at an antique sale or estate sale or whatever, this sort of, like, African voodoo fetishy thing. And so the guy, like, one night he jokingly, he gets into this road rage incident, like, this, and this dude, he's, like, a gangster or whatever. And then he gets so mad about it that he's like, man, I wish I could kill that dude or whatever. And then, like, he stabs the statue. And then, so then, like, a voodoo curse is, like, set into motion. So it's kind of like basically, and this one doesn't really have a twist. It kind of just goes on like to its logical conclusion. Like, you know, he's like, hey, this voodoo shit actually works, but you know, it ends up kind of like biting him in the ass in the end. So again, that one, pretty decent. The next one is the one that most people point to as their favorite. And this is easily one of the standout ones. It's called The Silent Scream. And this has, Peter Cushing in it and Brian Cox, who was in fuck tons of British stuff. I mean, he is super, super recognizable. And he was in, like, the Indiana Jones movies, stuff like that. So, So, Brian Cox plays this dude named Chuck, and he was in prison for 2 years for robbery. I guess he was, like, a safecracker. And while he was in there, Peter Cushing, who plays this dude named Martin Blewick, like a German fella, he has been counseling him and, like, giving him money and stuff like that while he's in prison. And so, once Chuck gets out, he goes back to Martin's pet shop to thank him. And he's like, well, okay, well, I'm going to give you a job, like, until you can get a better one, because I know you got out of prison and everything's rough and stuff. So he gives him this job. Apparently, Martin has, in the back or basement of his pet shop, he's doing these experiments with wild animals. So he has, like, panthers and tigers. And I don't know about tigers, but there's, like, panthers and all kind of, like, dangerous big cats and shit in there. And he's like, I'm trying to condition these animals to not need cages, like, to not attack me. So he's basically using, like, operant conditioning type of thing where he electrocutes the gates or, like, the, you know, the doors. And he has also conditioned them to, like, only eat, even though he puts food in front of them, like, they only eat, like, when he makes a certain sound. So he's doing, like, conditioning. And it will probably surprise no one to know that he also wants to try this shit out on people. And because Chuck does something that he probably shouldn't do, he ends up getting trapped in this, essentially, like, cage or, like, a, you know, a cell. And he starts to get conditioned as well because, and then it turns out, too, that, spoiler alert, Peter Cushing's character, who had told Chuck, he's like, yeah, I know all about, you know, prison and everything like that because I was in the concentration camps. Turns out he was a guard and not a prisoner. So he's, like, doing all these experiments with people to, like, see if they can be conditioned the same way that animals can be conditioned using electricity and things like that. This one was a really, really good one. I mean, the acting, Peter Cushing and Brian Cox, it's really great. I think this is the only thing they did together, but this was, and Peter Cushing, this was pretty late, like, he's pretty old in this, but the two of them are just fantastic in this, and it's just, it's such a great premise, and it's just, like, I don't know, I really like the way this one goes, and this one has a really, like, nasty ending, and I really didn't expect it to end like that. Like, I thought everything was gonna work itself out, but it didn't. So yeah, I really like this one, and like I said, this one, a lot of reviews that I said were, like, that I saw said this one, you could probably, because you can buy this, like, on DVD and Blu-ray and shit like that, obviously, nowadays. But a lot of people said this one's, like, just worth the price of admission, like, all by itself. And I think I would agree with that. But like I said, this one and Rude Awakening are easily my favorites. I mean, just the acting is great. The premise is great. It's just, like, fucking great. The next one, Children of the Full Moon. This is a werewolf one, which you'll be able to figure out pretty early on. This one actually stars Diana Doors, she, if you don't know anything about British culture or anything like that, she was like the British Marilyn Monroe. She was like the blonde bombshell, you know, back. She looked a lot like Marilyn Monroe. Actually, she looked more like, who's the other one? God damn it. What's her name?
I'll think Jane of it. Mansfield.
No, Mamie Van Doren. Mamie Van Doren. Okay, she actually reminds me a little bit
hotter.
Of Mamie Van Doren.
Hotter than fucking Monroe. I didn't see anything in Marilyn Monroe.
Mamie Van Doren had, like, bigger boobies.
Yeah, she was a lot hotter.
Way bigger boobies. But she, so Diana Doors was kind of like the, she looked a lot like Mamie Van Doren in the 50s. And then I didn't actually recognize her. I recognized her face. I was like, God, her face looks so familiar. I mean, she was obviously much, much older in this one. And this was actually 1980. I think that was only like 4 years before she died. But she kind of plays this creepy old woman. There's like this couple and they're going out. I think it's Somerset or whatever. And they're going out on holiday and their car wrecks. And they end up at this like really remote farmhouse. And Diana Doors plays this kind of like overly friendly, but like super creepy, like matronly woman. And she has this whole gaggle of children who she says are not all hers. Like some of them are like foster and like some of them are stepkids and stuff. And it's just the whole situation is just like really, really creepy and you're not entirely sure what's going on. But like I said, this one, it's not really a twist because they established pretty early on that there's some like werewolf action going on. So, but I like this at the middle of it. It's almost kind of like you think they get away because, the couple are like, oh, something bad happened. And then, you know, but then later the guy wakes up in the hospital and they're like, oh, we were just in a car crash. So for a while, they think the whole werewolf shit was like a dream, which I thought was kind of cool. So there was like ambiguity for a while over whether the werewolf shit really happened or not. But yeah, it's definitely a werewolf story. So yeah, that was also a good one. The next one, is Carpathian Eagle. This is a serial killer one. This is basically about all these dudes keep turning up dead with their hearts cut out. You know, so the cops are just kind of like, okay, well, serial killer. So while they're investigating, they go to this woman who is writing a book about, essentially, it was kind of like a Countess Bathory type of woman. Like 300 years ago, she had killed like 107 dudes, like cutting their hearts out. So they think that somebody knew about that, and so they're doing a copycat type thing, like 300 years later, even though it's apparently not a real well-known story. So they go to this woman that's writing a book about it, and then they go to this like this older woman who's like a descendant of the Countess, and they're kind of like investigating all of that situation. And I don't really want to spoil this one either, although I saw where this was going about halfway through. Like, I'd figured out who the killer was. So I don't know. Your mileage may vary. I'm not gonna spoil it, but I figured out who the killer was. Now, interestingly, on the Wikipedia page and everywhere else, they have the 11th episode listed as Visitor from the Grave. But on Shudder, Visitor from the Grave is the last episode. That's like the 13th one. I think this might have been my least favorite. Maybe just because, one, you could see where it was going. Two, the woman that played, she's like an American heiress or something, and she's like in the UK. And this dude breaks into her house, like, while her husband is away, or her boyfriend, and is say, like, oh, your boyfriend owes me money or whatever, and I'm just gonna, like, take it out of your vagina. Like, so he tries to, like, rape her, and she straight up shoots him in the face, like, with a shotgun. And then she gets, like, really super hysterical about it, and then just sees the dude everywhere. So, like, the dude is, like, haunting her. And she's, because she was mentally unstable to start with. Pretty much, like, as soon as you know that she's, like, an heiress and has a shit ton of money, you can pretty much see, and I don't feel bad about spoiling this one because, like I said, I've seen a lot of stories like this. Basically, the whole thing was a setup. Like, she didn't really shoot that dude. It was all, and her boyfriend and the dude that she shot and this psychic and this, like, quote-unquote Indian Swami medium, they were all, like, in on it, like, to get her to blow her head off or get committed or whatever so they could take all her money. But it's still good. I think this was like, but look, I think it was my least favorite one. One, just because it was a little bit predictable, and two, because the woman that played the American heiress was just like way over the top, like with the hysterics, you know what I mean? So, you know, that's, but it was good otherwise. Like, it had some like creepy shit going on. Two Faces of Evil. These last two were like some of the weirdest ones. Two Faces of Evil is essentially like a doppelganger story where there's this family and they're going on holiday again and they're out in this car and there's like a rainstorm and they pick up this dude that's like wearing a yellow raincoat and a yellow hat. Like he looks like the Gorton's fisherman, and you can't really see his face. And pretty much immediately, as soon as he gets in the car, he attacks the dad, and they run off the road. The car flips over, and then everybody's in the hospital. But later on, like, the mom and the kid aren't really hurt, but the dad, apparently he had, like, some glass from windshield, like, went into his throat or something, so he can't talk. And then so they take the dad home, and then he starts acting really weird, and, like, the mom starts becoming convinced that the dude in the raincoat and her husband are, like, had switchblade, or one of them was a doppelganger. You know what I mean? The, like, the husband looked like her husband, but wasn't really her husband. So that was, because I wasn't really sure, I didn't know that it was about doppelgangers at first, so I was just sitting there going, like, wait, what the fuck is going on? But they kind of establish it, but it takes a while, like, for it to know that it's about doppelgangers. But this one was a pretty good one, too. Although I think this was, like, my second least favorite. And then the last one, although it's the 11th one if you're watching it on Shudder, this one's called The Mark of Satan. And if you're into, like, numerology, not numerology, but like conspiracy theories or stuff like that, this one was actually pretty good, because this is a dude, and he's he works in a mortuary, and he becomes obsessed with, like, there's this patient that's brought in, and I think he was like a neurosurgeon, and he had apparently tried to drill into his head with, you know, with a drill, to let the devil out or a demon or something. Because, like,
a girl tried that on down and filmed it. Remember that?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
She took that acid and fucking drilled it down through her third eye. That was weird shit, man. People were fucking tripping back in the day.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. So, man, I don't know. When did that happen?
70s.
So maybe that's where they got the idea, yeah, of, like, 70s. For the start of this.
Late 60s, early, yeah, 70s, something like that.
So he tried to drill into his own head, and he doesn't kill himself right away, but then, like, the other doctors, like, try to save him, but they're not able to. And the last thing he says before he dies is, "Leave my soul alone." So the guy that works at the mortuary becomes obsessed with this case, and he starts to become obsessed with the number 9, because, like, people say it, and he's just like, oh my god, it means something.
Number 9?
Yeah, that's number what I was thinking that the whole time I was watching that. And, yeah, and so he starts to become convinced that there's almost kind of, like, I don't know if it's so much, like, the devil, or it's, like, the devil in the form of a virus, and he thinks that there's, like, this conspiracy that, like, everyone's in on it, and they gave him this evil virus to do something. I'm not entirely sure what the end game is, but so this dude, like, he thinks that there's weather vanes, like, he, every time he looks up at a weather vane, like, he hears, like, radio static, like, in his head, like, something's, like, communicating with him and stuff. So it's kind of like he has, like, schizophrenia or something like that. But, and then he's, so everybody, he thinks everybody's in on this conspiracy to give him this evil virus for whatever reason, because he's an innocent person or whatever. He has this really horrible mother, who he ends up killing, and, you know, good riddance. But, and he also has this woman who lives in his building, and then it ends up, like, she helps him hide the body. And then this is another one, too, where you're not entirely sure whether he's just, like, paranoid, or whether there is this cabal of people, like, Satanist something or other, that are trying to, like, get into his brain somehow and getting him to eat a baby, because that's in there, too. You know, so just who wouldn't want somebody to eat a baby? But yeah, he's trying to, like, get him to do that, and then it's like halfway through you're kind of just like, he's like, oh no, I'm fine now, I was just being paranoid, I had a moment and they fixed it. But then you're not entirely sure. But yeah, so as I said, if you're really into anthology horror, you know, and if you've watched this, because like I said, I feel like maybe a lot of people have watched it recently because Shudder just added it. But if you don't have Shudder, but you should get Shudder. But if you don't, then I think you can watch it on Pluto for free, and you might be able to watch it on Tubi for free. I'm not entirely sure. But these are all, like, these are all really good. They're all really worth watching. Like I said, it's like 13 sort of short Hammer movies. They're, I think the shortest one is like 45 minutes, and the longest one is like 53 minutes. You know, like I said, some of them are better than others. I think that The Silent Scream is the best one, and The Silent Scream and, Rude Awakening are, like, kind of tied for my favorites out of the series, but they're all pretty decent. There was none of them that I would have been like, oh, well, that was a waste of time. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I would say it was about on par with Night Gallery.
Yeah, so especially if you like Night Gallery or anything, or Thriller or any of those type of things, or if you like, the Amicus movies, then you would probably like really dig this. Like some of, like, I know that some people thought, like, because I looked at a lot of the Shudder comments, and it was either kind of like everybody loved it, or there was a couple that were probably like younger, and they were just probably like, these are so boring and slow. But you know, a lot of the stuff from that era was. They took a while to, like, establish, because these are essentially, like, mini-movies. They're, like, an hour long.
Right.
So they need to, like, do some character development. And I like that they kind of did, some of them were supernatural, some of them weren't supernatural, some of them were kind of, like, surrealism or dreamlike, and some of them were kind of more prosaic. So they kind of, like I said, had something for everybody. Kind of happy that there wasn't a vampire one, I have to say. There was a werewolf one, and there was a witch one, but...
Yeah.
Maybe even back then, vampires are like, yeah, we're sick of vampires. We're Hammer. We're not doing any fucking vampires, okay? That's I know that's kind of our thing. But yeah, so like I said, if you're into horror anthologies, then it's definitely worth checking out. I'd be interested, because I know we have a lot of British listeners, to know if you guys saw this when you were kids, or, you know, if you saw it later on and what you thought about it. Like I said, everybody in this... Oh, I forgot to mention, too, that the one with the serial killer, the Carpathian Eagle one, had an appearance by a very, very young Pierce Brosnan. He was actually kind of one of the victims. He was only in it for, like, 2 minutes or something. He had a couple of lines. But I was, like, watching it, I was like, holy shit, that's Pierce Brosnan. But now, I think he was in that British movie. Wasn't he in The Long Good Friday? But I can't remember if that came out before this or after this. So this might have been, like, his first big, like, role, maybe, even though he was only in it for, like, 2 minutes. But, yeah, if you know anything about British cinema or British TV or anything like that, everybody in this is familiar. And it's just, like, crazy. And even me, I'm not from the UK, but it's, like, I've seen a lot of the movies and TV from over there, so I recognize pretty much everybody. But, yeah, so I think I was most excited to see Magenta and see Dim. Because those are the only times I've seen them, and it was cool to, like, see them in something else. But, yeah, definitely check this out. It's a lot of fun. And let us know what you thought about it in the comments. And we will see you guys on the next movie retrospective. Bye.